Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Joel, I don't often get asked who my favorite wrestler is, but when I do, I sometimes flip out a little bit, depending on the context. However, Miro has been one of my favorite wrestlers lately. In the ring, I think you can just do a breakdown of the story he tells, every facial expression, every body movement, every single, like, the length of time he sells, every move counts. It's just it's a cliche, but it's a clinic. It's a clinic on how to effectively wrestle a smart, believable, hard-hitting, compelling match. And his promos have been off the charts lately. I was as hard as probably anybody on the whole video game shtick that just felt self-indulgent and he's not taking his job seriously. And, you know, Tony Khan needs to step in and say, hey, you know, you got to do more for us than lean into this whole video game thing. I just loved him lately. And he replaced Jon Moxley in the tournament. And now we're going to get Bryan Danielson against Miro in the finals of the Eliminator tournament. I think it was a good move. I don't know how long the story arc was for Miro if this didn't happen. But I think it's better to move that ahead quickly than it would be to rush, say, an Adam Cole or a CM Punk, or I'm trying to think of some other top name, or Cody Rhodes even. Like, just don't rush some other top name into it. I like this move. I thought the match with Orange Cassidy tonight was just, you know, pitch perfect for what was called for in this situation. And I like the stare down at the end. It feels big, and obviously you don't want it to, and, you know, the circumstances are such, and we'll talk about it with Jon Moxley. You don't wish for that to happen, but I thought this was a good audible. How about you?
Yeah, of course. You know, first and foremost for Jon Moxley, I'm glad to see that, you know, he's going into treatment, that he's bettering himself. And I thought what CM Punk said felt really authentic and heartfelt. But for Miro, I mean, this is just like a natural fit for, you know, what has happening in his storyline. I mean, I love that he's talking about, God, are you taunting me by putting me into this, or is this a gift from you? You know, it's just, yep. It's so great. And then just him in the match, it's like, you know, Orange Cassidy is a great wrestler that, like, a lot of people like, and they want to see him win. But it's like, man, for the opportunity to see Miro against Bryan Danielson with the work that Danielson has been putting in as of late in AEW, I mean, that's going to be a great match between those two. And just Miro is just this phenomenal heel as of late, where he doesn't have any go-away heat at all. I mean, I want to see him, you know, continue to win, but I love him playing just the character that he has been, where you can't wait to see him get his comeuppance too. But I also want to see how far he can take it, because at this point in time, I mean, we talk about what is the ceiling for Miro, and he just seems like he is very quickly ascending to the point where I can very much see him being, you know, in contention to be another guy who's fighting for the championship actually at a pay-per-view.
I totally agree. I think that Miro is a rising star this year. I don't know if he's like most improved in the traditional sense. It's usually reserved for wrestlers who, you know, had shown a ton of promise or showed promise, but never reached that level. And with him, it's been just kind of a roller coaster in AEW. But in terms of refining his act and elevating his act and putting himself in a position to have you say what you just said about him, where I would consider him, yes, an actual contender to hold the AEW world title for a significant length of time, not just, you know, passing the belt from one guy to another, or a one or even just a 3-month reign. And frankly, I'd just like to see that part of his legacy is having been a world champion for gold watches, just because you've been around forever. The idea that, oh, you should get a world title run and, you know, your career is less if that doesn't happen. I think Miro's earned that level. I think he can deliver pay-per-view main events. And Bryan Danielson's going to be that example. I won't even call it a test, because I doubt he will not. Saying it's a test means he could pass or fail. And I just think Bryan Danielson and Miro is a lock It's just a chance for him to display that he can work a top level, pay-per-view match where he should be considered for that. And yeah, he was great again tonight. The body language all the way to the end, you know, with the handshake offer from Danielson and the way he backed away, but he backed away in a way that didn't say I'm a coward. Mm-hmm. You. He backed away in a way that said, I will destroy you if I don't back away now. We will save it for when it counts in the ring. Like, that's the body language. And I just think he thinks that stuff through, or he has great instincts. Either way, it works.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and this is – we've seen really good matches from Miro as of late. But I think that when people see Bryan Danielson go up against Miro, I think that they're really going to start to see Miro at another level as someone who's not just, you know, this great character who's doing these great promos, but someone who can have these fantastic matches. And so I am eternally jealous that I will not be there for it, but I think that it's going to be just a great match.
Yeah. As for what prompted it. Yeah. John Moxley, Tony Khan broke the news on social media. Was it just yesterday or was it 2 days ago? It's almost a blur. I think it was just yesterday.
I thought it was today. Yesterday.
No. It was yesterday that he broke the news.
Okay.
It feels like 2 days ago now. But yeah, it was yesterday afternoon or evening, and he announced that John Moxley had checked himself into in treatment for alcohol treatment and wished him well. I mean, it's just there's been so many heartfelt comments, you know, on social media for this, and I think raising an awareness for people who are struggling. And that help is out there. And, you know, Punk said he thought he was too macho, too cool, too much of a badass to ask for help, and he should have sooner. And, you know, Moxley did. I do think some real good can come out of this. I don't know a ton on, you know, the Moxley situation and what built up to this mm-hmm. and what the break point was. And it's nobody's business, you know, but his and Renee's and whoever they choose to share it with, which, you know, might include Tony Khan because he's paying John a lot of money to be a central star. You know, they can let him in on some of it, obviously, and he was probably, consulted to a degree on this. But maybe not. Maybe Renee just said, this is what's happening, and Tony's like, good. You know, I don't need to know anything else. Just let us know when he's better, and we'll work it out. Just like Hangman Page going to be a dad and have a kid. It's like, take time off when you need it. And for Punk to say, yeah, there were people who were mad at me when I had to walk away, I still just can't believe there are people mad at him, but I think some opinions are so not worth repeating over and over again over the years because you should just dismiss them and move on because they're so it's not even being a troll. It's just being a dick. And I'm kind of tired of like even acknowledging that those people existed where it's like, you know, people criticizing Punk for his mental and physical health walking away when he did. I had no time for that argument and no time for people who said that. And I'm just kind of at a point where I don't even want Punk to acknowledge those people existed, but that's his story to tell his way. That's just my opinion on it. I just don't like giving credit to them. I'm not a fan of, you know, I said the other day, like I'm not a fan of podcasts that go, well, on Twitter, this person said this. It's like, well, first of all, who are they and are they worth repeating and listening to? In this case though, the real good comes from Moxley being this ultimate badass who, you know, volunteered to go public through Tony Khan and Renee, his wife, also posting, I think that was posted today, acknowledging it. It seems like anybody who out there who is like, oh God, what will people think? Moxley can be that role model for people to say, you know, if with his millions, he just became a father. He's got this super smart, wonderful wife at home. And he needed help. So who am I to walk away from help? Who am I to say the experts mm-hmm. can't help me? And I think it could end up doing a lot of good. I'm not wishing this upon him. Obviously it'd be better if this weren't an issue where he felt the need to go to check himself in, but there will be a good result from it. And I think CM Punk drawing attention to it and kind of doubling down on that and letting people know it's okay to be vulnerable and ask for help is a great thing right now. And I mean, with COVID and all kinds of other things going on in the world, you know, people might feel the need to get help, and this could prompt that.
Yeah, I think it sends a great signal to the people watching, the people who are fans of John Moxley for all the reasons that you said. And I also think it's great for the wrestlers as well, you know, because they've lived through such a long time, you know, in WWE specifically, you know, as a company where you just kept getting through it. You know, regardless of what you were going through, what injury was happening, what drug addiction you had, the expectation was that you just fought through it and you kept showing up from show to show. And of course, yeah, that leads to burnout. Someone like CM Punk who really had to step away. And I think it's a great signal to, you know, wrestlers at any level, you know, that it's okay to take some time away and take care of yourself. And Tony Khan has proven that that's what, you know, AEW, he wants his company about, is that it's really about taking care of the wrestlers first and not just trying to go out and make your appearances. That he really does care, you know, about each and every one of them. And so it's just great to see that, you know, the way that this has been received by fans. But, you know, like you said, that Jon Moxley, someone who's this big, gruff kind of character, you know, can also admit that, you know, he's human too. He's more than just the character that you see on TV. There's also Jonathan Gooth, the person, you know, and he needs to take some time away to work on himself. And I think it's just a great signal, you know, to everyone who's watching.
All right, let's pause and introduce ourselves, and then we will bring on, to kick off the show, our on-site correspondent. And then we've got Evan and Nick and Moore on hold as our first callers. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, November 3rd, 2021. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, founder, publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, the website pwtorch.com, and the host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, and also the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. Those are two separate feeds. Search Wade Keller on your podcast app. That's Wade Keller. And you'll see two logos pop up. One is red, one is blue. Subscribe to both. The red are the live post shows. You can stream it live or download the final version on our podcast feed, which is what most of you do. And you can also download our regular podcasts, including our flagship yesterday, covering a wide array of current events of pro wrestling. Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter columnist Rich Fan joined me on the flagship yesterday. I encourage you to check that out. We talked a lot about Cody getting booed, roads to the top, how much Malachi Black played into that, the job Cody did. We'll get into that momentarily with our on-site correspondent. And Joel, you and I, I'm sure, will talk about that later. So check that out if you haven't yet. Okay, so we are talking AEW Dynamite live, and you can join us if you are live streaming the show. We might have more people from the West Coast who are watching live and can join us than usual, so consider yourself invited. We'd love to get some new voices on the show, as always, male and female. And our number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad, and that'll flag you on our switchboard so we know to bring you on and you aren't just in the background listening. You can also email the show, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. And you can email about anything. You can email during Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown for our post shows. You can email while you're listening to the show. And you can also email for our flagship and mailbag editions on any topic in wrestling. You can help steer the direction of our show. And we welcome disagreement. We welcome clarification. We welcome topics that we don't normally cover. It is very open, and we're always monitoring that inbox. And so take advantage of it. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. All right. The other voice you've heard so far is Joel Donnell. He is a pwtorch.com contributor. Joel, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on, Wade. I apologize to everyone. I'm calling in through my phone. I must have rolled over my cord to my regular microphone. So I'm getting that ordered, getting that replaced, so that next time I'll come in a lot clearer.
Yep, no problem. Stuff happens. And, you know, I'm just disappointed we couldn't drone deliver it to you in the last 2 hours. We're not too far away from that, Joel.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, Amazon just dropping it on your doorstep from above.
Well, yeah. I did get it ordered before the show started. So it said, like, it'll be delivered tomorrow morning. So, you know, power
awesome.
Of technology.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, cool. So let's dive into the next portion of the show here, and we'll begin with Gregory, our on-site correspondent, who is in Independence, Missouri tonight. Gregory, welcome to the show. Where are you right now? We're hearing a ton of background or street noise.
Yeah, I'm standing outside the arena. People are just being so good for about to say less. So, yeah, so ask me anything, and I will answer as best I can. I've got some notes here.
Cool, yep. You're breaking up a little bit on us at the beginning there, too, but it's always cool to hear the atmosphere in the arena. So, Greg, I guess first things first, what did it look like, a completely full house? I know they were within hundreds of seats, hundreds of tickets of becoming an official sellout as of yesterday.
No, I didn't think it was a complete sellout. There was a section next to where that was cut off, and looked to be maybe another section that was cut off, but it was pretty full.
Is there a place you can go that's more quiet or better reception? It is really tough hearing you.
This.
Oh yeah, that's a lot better.
Thanks. Speaker on. I was talking to him before.
Oh yeah. Yep. So go ahead. Repeat what you said about the attendance. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It was one of the only sections that was cut off in the building. I think Wrestle Ticket said there were about 4,700 seats available, and most of them were full. I would say your estimation is correct, within a few hundred.
Yep. So I want to get into the reaction to Cody, because that's been a big topic of conversation since last week, last couple of weeks. So on television, and I want Joel to back me up on this before I throw to you, Gregory, it sounded like there wasn't a big reaction for Cody tonight and that they were more neutral and muted than in past weeks. Is that what you heard, Joel? And then I want to hear from Gregory what he experienced in the building.
That's what I thought I heard, you know, during the entrance. That was kind of like, oh, you know, it's not kind of the same typical strong reaction. But then during the match, it seemed like during Cody's comeback that there was, you know, a bit more cheering for him than there was booing. But I'd like to hear kind of what, Gregory, you thought those percentages were, cheering versus booing.
Because I'm also wondering if they messed with the sound, you know, the crowd mic during the ring entrance. And that's the value of people like Gregory who are in the building. Tell us what really happened. Gregory, tell us what the crowd response was for the ring entrance and any other reactions to Cody.
I actually took a bathroom break during the entrance, so I didn't hear really well the ring entrance audio. But as far as the match went, I felt as the match went on that the crowd seemed to be – there were dueling chants going on. The crowd seemed to be, from my vantage point, more against Cody than for him. There was – I mean, he had his fair share of supporters. There were dueling chants going on, but there were a lot of people cheering, especially when once Andrade picked up the victory. I would say for me that the boo – seemed to outweigh the cheers. That was from my vantage.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't overwhelming boos like in recent weeks, but, you know, Joel, yes, I definitely heard some boos. In fact, even during the ring entrance, I heard scattered boos, but when the music first started, it didn't just erupt into Roman Reigns-esque boos,
mm-hmm.
and in a way, I think Cody will consider that maybe that last week's promo was a victory, or it could be kind of city by city, kind of like it was with Roman at times too. And I'm sure Cody just loves us talking about him in the same breath as Roman, but you know that ill-fated babyface push of his. Joel, why don't you jump in with a question for Greg?
Yeah, so I just want to ask you about kind of the opening segment and just, you know, what is the general feel about the Omega and Paige program? I mean, does that feel like it's the hottest program on the show right now?
I've got to be honest, I did not get that impression. I was surprised. I mean, I'm not saying Paige got no reaction. I mean, he got a reaction, but I thought it was kind of subdued, to be honest. And there were probably about, I'd say, 5 or 6 people that I would say got bigger reactions than Hangman. I feel like he was super, super hot before he took time off and then lost the 6-man. Since he's been back, I mean, I know the segment last week was very well received by the live crowd in Boston, but I did not feel like that was the main event of the next pay-per-view level reaction. As I said, like, I feel like there were several people and several segments that were more over than Paige. And so I came away surprised at just the reaction that it wasn't bigger.
And who were those other people?
Yeah, go ahead and rank who got the biggest positive reactions.
I would say Inner Circle, fans loved Inner Circle, and they hated Dan Lambert. That was one of the most over things. Darby Allin was super over. I'd say maybe the biggest of all would have been Bryan Danielson, and we'll have to get into what happened after the show went off the air, because that's very noteworthy as well, I think. But Danielson, Darby Allin was super popular, and by default, MJF was super unpopular. CM Punk got a very big reaction, and I'm trying to think, is there one more person? John Silver was just below that level. He wasn't at the Punk, Danielson, Darby Allin level of over, but he got a good reaction for his promo, and so I would say that all the people I mentioned there, Inner Circle, Punk, Danielson, probably Orange as well, and Tony Khan himself. Tony Khan came out before the show and he came out after the show, and so I would say that those were probably the biggest crowd pops. As far as heel heat, it was MJF and Dan Lambert by far.
Well, let's get into what happened before and after the show, especially after the show, if that's the most noteworthy, Gregory.
Yeah, so before the show, there were three dark matches taped before the Dark Elevation taping. Butcher and Blade beat Wheeler Yuta and Chuck Taylor. Then Riho defeated the local talent, and Matt Hardy defeated the local talent. Then through the Elevation taping, Powerhouse Hobbs won a quick match. And then there was a women's tag team match with Nyla Rose and Emi Sakura versus Rio Mizunami and Ruby Soho. For people who are interested in the match, I won't spoil. I think that was one of the dark matches, too. And that was a victory for Nyla Rose. And Ruby Soho pinned Emi Sakura, I'm sorry. And then she was attacked after the match, and that's just Statlander made the save, which builds up for their second-round tournament match. And then the other match on the Dark Elevation taping was the Acclaimed and two partners against members of the Dark Order. And so people who want to watch that can check that out for themselves. And Max Caster had some heel lines about Pat Mahomes and Kansas City barbecue being overrated. And so had a Joe Biden poop his pants line. It was less controversial than what he was saying before, obviously. I thought that was good. And then Tony Khan came out just before the show and talked about, and this will figure into what happened after the show. He said this was the second hardest week for him since he got into the wrestling business. And I guess that's referencing John Moxley's situation. So he came out and said that before the show started. Then after the show started, I guess we'll get into it now. After the show went off the air, Miro left the ring without incident with Danielson. And then then Tony Khan came out and he talked. And he mentioned specifically that this was the second hardest week in his wrestling career in the business. You obviously know what the hardest week was. It was the death of Brody Lee. And then from there, he gave the Ryan Danielson took the microphone, put over Orange Cassidy, and then he mentioned that he mentioned the last text he ever received from Brody Lee, asked him how's life, and Brody Lee responded by saying it was effing awesome. So Danielson out and put over Moxley as well, saying he doesn't think he'd be in AEW if it wasn't for Moxley. Moxley showed Danielson that he could perform at the level he needed to coming out of the previous environment and all that. So noteworthy for Khan, really. He was visibly choking up as he talked about how emotional this week was for him and how much it meant and how thankful he was for the crowd and for the support that Moxley's getting. So it was, I think it's pretty noteworthy in that regard. I don't think it was your typical go-home segment. I don't know what people in other cities get, but this didn't feel like a typical go. And then after that was Bryan Danielson putting over Justin Roberts and playing off his previous history where he teased choking him with the NXT incident from all those years ago. But then he ended up praising Justin Roberts and talking about how great of an announcer he is. And so I would say it was very notable in that it was not your typical post-show segment with Khan showing some visible emotion and then the comments from Danielson that followed. So all of that was very over with the live crowd, as you'd expect.
And did everybody stick around for all that? Or did some people file out?
I think very, very few people left. If any, it was a small portion of people that left.
Yep. We talked about who got the biggest babyface reactions, and you mentioned Dan Lambert got a lot of heel heat. How about heel reactions? Britt Baker, Kenny Omega, Andrade, FTR. Trying to think who else would be in that category. Miro, MJF. Usually MJF has the most heel heat, along with Dan Lambert. Was that the case again?
Yeah, both of them. I would say Britt Baker didn't get a ton of heat. It was that segment wasn't the crowd didn't wasn't wasn't super reactionary to the Jamie Hayter Anna Jay match. I mean, FTR was okay. By the way, I absolutely love their theme, that Midnight Express kind of spinoff theme. I think that is absolutely awesome. If that's, I don't know if the first time, I think it might have been the first time it played. I absolutely love that theme. I wanted to throw that in there. And then I thought Andrade actually was a borderline babyface, considering, to me, the reaction to Cody, it was very, at least 50-50. So I wouldn't quite put him in that category. And Kenny didn't have super heat. I mean, a lot of people around me were cheering for Omega. And but by far, MJF and Dan Lambert were super over appeals. And Paige Van Zandt as well. I think she's I second Todd Martin's sentiment of the emailer on the mailbag last week that, I mean, she's a natural. If she wants to take it seriously, yeah, she could be very good in this industry. So. And
if,
my battery
you
is
weren't told...
dying very rapidly, so.
Oh, sure. Yep. Real quick, if you were not told Kenny Omega and Hangman Page was the main event of the next pay-per-view for the world title, and you just based the crowd reaction tonight, would you think it was a main event? Like, did it reach quite that level?
No, I don't think it has. I mean, based on the crowd reaction tonight, yeah, no, I cannot. I would not think so.
Is there anything else you want to share with us that's in your notes that before your battery dies on us?
I mean, not a ton else. I think I got most of the information out, which would have been the crowd reactions in the post-show segment with Tony Khan and Brian Danielson. So there might be some other things I could add, and maybe if I think about them, I might send an email a little later. But other than that, I think I pretty much said what I was really thinking about the show, and thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks, Gregory. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good night. Thanks.
Yeah, you too. Yep. If you want to be an on-site correspondent for a future episode of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, after Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown, email me at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com and put the name of the city in your subject line and the email. Then I can do a search for that city as the date approaches, and it will pop up and not get lost in the mix with a ton of other emails, especially if you're letting us know, you know, weeks or months ahead of time, as often happens with our on-site correspondents. So, again, that's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Appreciate Gregory phoning in and giving us a lot of insight into what happened off-camera and crowd reactions. I had not talked to Tony Khan about his week. That is, to say that this is the second hardest week that he's been through. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's anything else. There doesn't have to be anything else, but it kind of conveys the idea that this was more than Moxley calling him up and going, "Hey, Tony, you know, I don't know if you know, but I think I have a drinking problem and I'm going to check myself into treatment." Oh, okay. All right. Good for you. You know, stay in touch. Like it had to be more than that. If this is like this tough week,
yeah.
I mean, you know, cause you don't know, and I'm not prying, about the details, but this, you know, saying that is a window into what a, you know, kind of emotional week and, you know, whatever led to this was something on the higher end of emotionally challenging for key people involved. I would say that is, unless something else happened in Tony's life, he's not sharing with us. It sounds like this was a pretty stressful ordeal regarding Moxley, and not as straightforward as is the case in some situations like this, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, we won't know, you know, unless, Moxley decides to share that publicly. But, you know, it seems like, that probably something had been going on for a while, you know, and it seems like, you know, it probably was Moxley himself who took it upon himself to get the help that he needed, you know, and it was probably a really big moment for the people around him, you know, and a really big moment for John himself. So again, like, it's hard to speak on it, not knowing, you know, more of the facts other than just that he's heading into treatment. But, I can only imagine that for Tony Khan, someone who is really close to a lot of the wrestlers on the roster, that, you know, this would be a really tough and emotional week for him.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, well, let's jump to our callers. I'll give the phone numbers out one more time. If you are listening to our live stream, you are cordially invited to call and tell us your thoughts about the show tonight or ask questions. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. All right, we'll begin with area code 705. Welcome to the show. Go ahead, state your name and the city you're calling from, please.
Hey, Wade, Hinton from London, Ontario. Thank you.
How you doing, Hinton? Good to hear from you. I know why.
Good,
yeah. I've forgotten.
So
I've got it. All right.
I want to start with, where's my notes here? CM Punk. So I thought, I heard what you had to say with Rich Fan on your podcast yesterday. I sort of disagree. I thought Punk's attitude on Rampage last week was fine. I thought he would be disappointed with Kingston, not because of the interruption, but more because, you know, he had respect for him. And then he probably thought he would be accepting of Bryan Danielson's handshake, and he didn't. So I thought the I'm disappointed line wasn't CM Punk so much being just, you know, dad CM Punk. I thought it was just him commenting on Eddie Kingston's behavior of late. So I was fine with that. However, today, him getting so hung up about being interrupted, I felt was a little dissonant with that attitude. And I think it would have made more sense for Kingston to do something else to Punk to warrant in-ring attention from him. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on this feud so far?
Yeah, I mean, even if he was disappointed in Kingston and in the Bryan Danielson situation, still to just go, I'm disappointed in you. Like, it's just the tone is it's a, you know, a teacher or a dad or a coach who, you know, a kid has let them down. It just kind of was weird to me. You know, the tone, everything. And then I think he confirmed tonight he was disappointed in him because he interrupted him. And then he made it worse by going, I don't like to get interrupted. And it's like suddenly he's sounding like Vince McMahon, you know, don't interrupt me. I'm the boss. Like, who are you to get so hung up on being interrupted? And just the kind of weird social unawareness that if you really are upset about being interrupted, and not every, people like to be interrupted, but how does that sound when you proclaim to the world, I do not like being interrupted. I take that very personally. Like, it's just, I don't know. I didn't think it was the best look for him. I thought he even got prickly with a fan who said, fight him. And he's like, well, he's not here. You know, like, so I don't know. I just wasn't quite sure. I've wanted angry Punk, you know, more than happy Punk. But this wasn't quite on tone for me either. Small sample size of two situations last Friday and tonight, but I still think he's in search of a mission and in search of his voice. I really do. And I this was a window into something that I don't think is particularly marketable with him. Joel, how about you? What do you think about this?
Yeah, Wade, I really do agree with that in the fact that, like, we don't know what CM Punk's real mission is yet, other than it's a guy who was excited to come back and he's kind of seeing if he still got it here. And the whole reasoning behind the Eddie Kingston and CM Punk feud, you know, feels just very like it's been shooed in at kind of the last moment at something to kind of, you know, round out the pay-per-view, presumably that they're going to have their match there. And just the reasoning, like you mentioned, is that it just feels very weak, you know, why Punk is against Eddie Kingston. Yes, I did like the fact that he was a more serious Punk, that it felt like he had a grudge and that something was going on. But I mean, the reasoning behind it, it just feels, you know, very weak. And I'm still waiting around for CM Punk to have like the serious, like, hey, I want to be champion. I want to be the best again. Like, I want to face the best wrestlers and like have a serious grudge against somebody, not just, you know, hey, this guy interrupted me, or hey, I just want to see if I'm good enough to face Darby Allin. Like, I want to see him get back into a serious feud. And, you know, it feels like I'm still waiting for that. And the other things that you mentioned, too, is it's like, you know, I keep going back and forth where it's like, you know, is that Punk's personality just kind of being prickly, you know, and letting that out a little bit, you know, to fans?
Which, by the way, matches his – what we saw tonight, Joel, matches his reputation behind the scenes of being prickly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and being kind of moody. I mean, that I don't think he hides from that. I just think we got more of a window into it in this unscripted environment than normal.
Yeah, and it's, and so that's more what I think it is. I mean, otherwise he's, you know, masterfully, you know, trying to turn heel, you know, very slightly by doing these little things, you know, every week. But I don't think that right now, at least, that's the direction that they're going. I think it's more just kind of Punk, and he's been given a lot of free rein. And, you know, at some point, I think it's going to have to be, you know, Tony Khan kind of reeling it in a little bit and giving him more of a focus.
All right. Hitting back to you.
Yeah, I think I may have been a bit too charitable to him on Friday, considering what we saw today. But I guess we'll see where this goes. I want to move on to someone I'm not going to be charitable to, and that is John Silver, who this guy's got a big match against Adam Cole coming on Friday. And I'm sorry, like, for someone who's going to face, you know, still like this hot new acquisition that AEW just got, he sounded like he was challenging Adam Cole to a water balloon fight or a laser tag competition or like a player versus player D&D game. And look, I like water balloons. I like laser tag. I like D&D. I would hang out with John Silver out of a wrestling environment. I'm sure we would be best friends, but this is not what I want to see in a wrestling promo. And Tony Khan likes this guy, but, you know, based on that text message he shared with the late John Huber about how he reminds him of someone. So what do you make of John Silver getting this kind of spotlight?
I loved Jason Paul's comment over at ProWrestling.net in his report. He said, as someone who doesn't keep a close eye on Being the Elite or dark shows, I have no idea what the hell Silver was talking about. I got pissed off watching this promo. I mean, for reasons that you said, Hinton, and this assumption that your world is everybody's world. Like, do you not know the context of the, you're talking in front of a million plus people on Dynamite, and you're doing these little clubhouse secret handshake inside joke stuff that's on a YouTube show, presumably. It felt tone deaf. It kind of made me angry that he did such an unserious clubhouse secret handshake promo on Dynamite. It was. I'm glad they're giving interviews with people leading into Rampage. I think that's smart. I was very disappointed in John Silver, Joel.
I can't articulate it better than that. But I mean, you know, that's the same thing for me, is that it seems like John Silver has his little, you know, kind of a niche, you know, people of the broader AEW fan base that, you know, like his energy and his enthusiasm. But yeah, this promo is playing to a very, you know, just a fraction of the audience that Dynamite has of the BTE stuff. And I, like Jason Powell, you know, I'm not always watching BTE. I'll watch it, you know, if I hear that something big happens on it. But, I mean, it's just playing to such a small amount of people. And so to see John Silver kind of in this big role, I mean, you've heard my thoughts on the Dark Order before, is that I feel that they're, you know, they're a nice act, but they're just cartoons. I mean, they're cartoons, you know, and you're wedging it in between all this other stuff that we're supposed to take seriously. So it just, whenever they do things like that, it just really doesn't ever work for me.
We all have goofy friends, but we don't think everyone's going to get the jokes that our friends that we have in our circle of friends, you know, and we don't, it's just so presumptuous that, like, you know, his funny little inside jokes are like something everybody's going to get as much of a kick out of as he and his buddies do. And, you know, and that what works on Being the Elite is going to work on Dynamite. I was just shaking my head during that one. Hinton, anything else?
Yeah, I don't think I'd even be as angry if at least the goofiness was on Dynamite. But I'm just worried that someday Tony Khan's going to put this guy in a serious feud and someone's going to attack John Silver's family, and this will be his tone still. And I think that's going to be my boiling point. But I want to also ask you about Adam Cole, because right now his involvement with the Young Bucks is starting to wear on me a little. I think he's kind of losing the edge that he had as a serious sort of faction leader on NXT. And I feel like the Bucks, while they are, I think they've been good on their own, pairing with Omega, I think they've kind of watered him down a little to where he's just kind of one of them instead of, you know, the guy I used to like on NXT. And even if they end up ousting Omega, I think the longer he stays in that environment, with, you know, Brandon Cutler behind him and such, I think his star power is starting to diminish a bit in my eyes. So am I reading a little too much into this? What do you guys make of Cole so far?
I'm with you on this one, Hinton. I want to give it breathing space. I've been a huge fan of the Bucks since they really just turned it up as a heel act in recent months. I mean, really, really good. But if they're friends in real, they're friends in real life, but that doesn't mean it translates or that it's the right time to feature them together on air. It's too late. I mean, it's, they're together. They're the super click. It's, so now it's not a matter of second guessing and undoing it, but it's more, you know, is there a way to change course? And I think, I mean, Cole isn't a total goof like the Bucks are. The Bucks are total goofs, but in like a gimmick appropriate way that I think works and makes them entertaining and makes people want to pay to boo them in addition to, you know, being entertained by how good their matches are. And I think they found that sweet spot. I agree that I like Cole in a more serious environment. I'm giving them some space to figure it out and find their stride, but we're getting to a point where there is some stuff with Cole that feels like it's diminishing him. I think the idea that there's, you know, that he's in the same faction with Kenny Omega is intentional. And, you know, eventually, you know, there's going to be that, is this town big enough for the both of us type moment. And we'll see where that goes. And there's a lot of possibilities. But yeah, it's weird, but like, I think Kenny's kind of goof personality is a better fit for what the Bucks are doing now than Cole. It's not that Cole is bad at it. And I don't think Hinton, you're saying that as much as him being around it is diminishing what is usually a more serious demeanor from him. Joel, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, of course, if we're thinking about last week and, you know, the dressed up as the Ghostbuster stuff, I mean, it didn't fit Cole at all. I mean, a guy who's more the serious, smoldering, cool guy, it didn't fit with kind of the goofiness that they're doing. And so I think that overall, you know, if you take out last week of what happened there, that I think that Cole is fine right now with the Young Bucks. You know, I'd like to see Cole just more kind of featured, like he's a big deal instead of this guy who's, you know, part of the elite. But then, you know, as far as Kenny Omega, I think it's less of Nakazawa and Brandon Cutler and the goofy people around him. And it's just more of his own personality, you know, coming out as, you know, he's just more kind of a zany, you know, almost borderline kind of Shawn Michaels DX a little bit, you know, he's got a little bit of that in him. But, you know, Adam Cole, I don't think that he's ruined by any means. But I would just like to see him more kind of featured as Adam Cole. He's a big deal instead of, you know, he's kind of featured more in these segments instead of like, here's a big Adam Cole match like they've done more with Bryan Danielson.
And on the bright side, I mean, Cole, you know, yes, if we exclude last week and the silliness there, but if we include everything but that, Cole is around the Bucks who are, you know, doing more, you know, kind of goof. I don't know. I hate to say goofy stuff because Kenny kind of has that corner market cornered, but they're more, you know, they're more like the obnoxious boo us because we're obnoxious and all that. But I mean, especially Nick and also Matt, but especially Nick is so good at it with the body language and the mannerisms and it's just the facial expressions are just so awesome. And Cole, that's not Cole's personality. You know, Cole's personality is a better match if you look history wise for something more serious, going back to ROH and NXT. And Undisputed Era. So he always is, you know, like tonight he was the guy talking, he was in the middle, he was in the center, he was the leader, and the Bucks were on either side of him. And so I think they're cognizant of that, and Cole is standing out as the more serious person, but I'm not seeing the Bucks adding to what I think we imagined Cole could have been. Part of that, again, I think it's exacerbated by the John Silver promo tonight and that's what they're having him do. And, you know, I mean, everybody who they signed, I think, I mean, I guess, I wouldn't say this about Bryan Danielson. It's just, you know, he didn't come in and just win the world title or get the world title program. He obviously fought Kenny to the draw, but, you know, he's kind of doing his own thing. But obviously in this Eliminator tournament, he's in a serious situation. But Cole and Punk, it's been kind of a slower build. Joel, I mean, do you think that if, as of November 3rd, they're in a better, the same or a worse place than your expectations when you heard they were about to debut?
I mean, Punk is in a far worse place. You know, he still gets the great reactions every single week, but as far as just like the performances and kind of, you know, where you imagined he'd be, I just think that a lot of people had a lot higher expectations. And I don't think that it's not that he's never going to reach those. It just is going to be a longer journey than I think a lot of people thought, you know, to get the ring rust off, to kind of get his bearings back on. And hopefully he, you know, has the appetite to want to be the top guy again, instead of just someone who wants to, you know, work with guys he never has before and put over the young talent. You know, Cole, I mean, he just came in as a really hot act that people wanted to see what he'd be able to do in AEW, you know, outside of WWE, where, you know, on the main roster, he was supposed to be the manager of Keith Lee, you know. And so I think that he's just not, he hasn't hit his full potential. I think that he's dipped, you know, from where he came in, but it hasn't been as dramatic of a fall off as I think CM Punk has been.
Hinton, anything else for us?
Yeah, good points, guys. Before I sign off, I wanted to give Eric Kroll a shout-out. He had a great column on the new kind of babyface that Hangman Page is presenting to us, and I agree with about 95% of what he wrote. So everyone go VIP if you want to check that column out. And thanks, Joel, and thanks, Wade, for taking my call.
Excellent. Thanks. Appreciate it. Good to talk to you. All right, we'll go to Evan in Chicago next. Evan, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What you think of Dynamite tonight?
Hey, what's going on? Thank you for remembering where I'm from, and I'm glad you do, because besides the numerous champions and stars that were born in this city, fun fact for you, before it debuted in AEW, Judas, Chris Jericho's theme song, was actually brought here for a takeover special. Now, besides that, I want to get back to what Cody did, speaking of Chicago. Tonight, even though it wasn't the main event, that was actually one of the pinnacles of what a main event should look like on AEW programming. But it wasn't on the main event, in my opinion, only because they still need Cody to play that, that he needs to play for not only himself, but for his coach, because I believe that deep down inside, Cody really is thinking about the fans. There is something in him that is saying, like, is there something missing out of me that I'm not yet tapping into yet that these fans are seeing, but I'm not seeing for myself? And I've been there before. I've been there so many times. And personally, I want to thank Cody for matches that he's given us, like, man, I'm going to go deep here, Dylan McQueen and Dean Alexander, for that kind of match that produced a match like what we just saw this past Tuesday with Daniel Garcia and RSP. That match that was produced on Elevation was probably one of the best matches I've seen on Elevation. I have two stars that have yet to be pressed and turned into diamonds in since they've been here for the very first time. And honestly, since the last time we've spoken, I had the honor to sit front row at the third Rampage event that was here in Chicago. And funny enough, the person who I walked in on as the show was going on was Lance Archer. And I know we had a long conversation about that. I know we had a long conversation about him and, you know, what was going on with him and Mox at the time. And hats off to CM Punk tonight for showing his support for Mox. I think what's going on is a beautiful thing with everyone standing in, banding in, and showing their love and support for what's going on. And through the times and all the trials and tribulations that he's been through, we've honestly, the ones who've experienced it firsthand, the ones who've followed him, they get to share exactly what it is to be in the shoes of not only the fan, not only the competitor, but for the life that has to that makes the choices to be a part of the lives that ultimately makes the bigger choices, and that's what we see out of CM Punk when we get what we got tonight out of him. Speaking of Punk, I want to talk about Eddie Kingston. I believe CM Punk needs someone like Eddie Kingston, because besides Moxley, if you stand with me, Eddie Kingston is the type of guy that would step to CM Punk and would say, where are you going? We kind of need you here right now, because it almost seems as though your mind is elsewhere. Now, I can be as biased as I want. I can be as biased as I want about CM Punk. But what I can't do is say that CM Punk would drift away and section himself off somewhere that he doesn't need to be. And with that being said, if his mind wasn't already on where it should have been, which is the AEW championship, in my opinion, if I'm not calling it too soon, it could have happened. Then you put someone in his path to make it happen. Why he wasn't in a tournament, I don't know. But since we have someone who was in a tournament, who was eliminated, you don't know where his footing is going to be next. And again, you find someone who hasn't been in these tournaments, who hasn't been put in a position to set themselves up for their contingency and everything like that. Contention rather. That would be a pick your poison right there, and I kind of commend Eddie Kingston for it. I'm not here for any Eddie Kingston slander. I'm not here for it. I don't want to hear it. I commend him for it. I support him, and I want to see how it all plays out this Friday. But yeah, honestly, from there, I think I have to agree with you on what you said about John Silver. I believe the man is honestly putting up numbers for him and his team. If there's a YouTube video out there somewhere of him cranking his arm for 10 minutes, I would love to see that touch a million views ASAP, pronto. And other than that, I believe the opening match, Mr. Omega and please forgive me because, I was going to talk about, Alan Angels. I was going to talk about his entrance as well. I wouldn't say it was very subdued. I'd say it was inadequate compared to his other reactions. But him being the man that he has been for the company honestly makes him less of a factor to the fans, only because we are understanding that whenever Justin Roberts is calling out, this match is for 20 minutes, this match is for 60 or 30, whatever, he's going to give you 5 rings in one match. He's going to put those up. He's going to put it up to that man to do exactly what it is that he sets out to do each time he comes down that ramp. And Mr. Angels, who was on a 4-match winning streak beforehand, went into that match already knowing what he was going to expect. And, admiration aside, Alan Angels did his thing tonight. And I could stutter on his name all I want, but if you put his name next to someone like Kenny Omega, then honestly, he deserved that time. No matter where it was placed in the card, he deserved it. What do you honestly think about Eddie Kingston and CM Punk? What's going on with CM Punk? What was going on in between time, Eddie Kingston not being there? What do you think should be the end result of this, that should ultimately be the resolving factor into these two's stories?
Sure. Thanks, Evan. Joel, your thoughts on Evan's last question, and feel free to respond to anything else that he brought up.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's some interesting things going on with the CM Punk and Eddie Kingston thing, because of what Punk had said about John Moxley, the heartfelt message about that. But then also Eddie Kingston, having that relationship with Moxley, and how all that's going to play out, in the ring as well. Do they acknowledge that friendship, or is it just kind of an exclusive grudge that Moxley's gonna, or that Punk's gonna have with Eddie Kingston? And so, right now, we talked about before kind of that their feud is not really all that strong, with CM Punk kind of going off of, hey, you interrupted me, I don't like that. And I think that I want to see more from this Rampage episode when they actually do go face to face and see what, a promo is like from Punk, where he's really in the face of another great talker like Eddie Kingston, and see, how does this feud evolve, and is it something that does lead into a match at Full Gear?
Anything else that Evan brought up you want to respond to either?
I mean, you know, CM Punk is kind of the main thing with it. You know, otherwise with John Silver, I mean, it's, you know, I can go without that.
Yeah. The Allen Angels Kenny Omega match, Evan brought that up, and I thought this was another example of AEW putting somebody there's a way to have a star win, but also elevate somebody else at the same time. And I think AEW might have done a little more of that than they ought to have at times, but it's not binary. It's not either an on-off switch. Like you don't just always do it or never do it. I think AEW's done it, had longer matches with big names who should have won quicker against certain opponents over time. But that said, I thought they did a really good job with Allen Angels here. I think they elevate, I wouldn't say he's like made, you know, I mean, if he was going to be a big top star, they probably would have indicated that they believe that by now. But they made him more relevant and elevated. And considering that this was the lead-in for Hangman Page coming out and you're playing off of the long dynamic between Hangman and Dark Order, you know, it fit. But the announcers from the beginning, is Allen Angels that one guy who's got Kenny's number? And, you know, Kenny's dominating, but Allen gets a good amount of offense in and look good. And, you know, Kenny certainly is part of helping make that happen. But, you know, and Kenny had, you know, that cocky cover, just sort of sitting on him. And, you know, in that sort of was why Allen Angels was able to kick out. Otherwise, he probably wouldn't have. But then it took that second V-trigger and a more serious leg hook to pin him. Just in the end, I thought it was smartly booked. You know, it's aggressively long, you know, how long that match went. But I think it worked. I mean, I probably would have shaved a few minutes off, but I don't know if the story would have been the same. What do you think about that kind of philosophically in general, and then specifically tonight, how often we see wrestlers lasting longer against stars than we would have predicted would be the case? And certainly it's not something you see in WWE very often where, you know, it's only people on their same level who are wrestling each other, or it's a squash.
Yeah, I think that overall it's really is case to case, you know, who are the two wrestlers who are involved in that match. And I think that tonight, you know, seeing this match between Omega and Angels, I don't remember the exact time, but I think it was like, you know, around 10, 12 minutes or so that they was as long as the match went. And, you know, most of the match was Angels kind of taking a lot of the signature spots from Omega while showing, you know, some of his athleticism. There was some nice false finishes with it, you know, trying to roll up Kenny Omega to get the surprise win. And I think that was kind of the way that was booked, was that you didn't ever think that, you know, Angels was ever just going to defeat Omega definitively, but he might sneak something on him. You know, and I'm fine with that being the story, you know, that he's not, you know, getting, you know, close false finishes on Omega, where the fans know that Omega is the one who's going to dominate this, that he's going to win. But there's a small little sliver of a chance that, you know, Allen Angels might, you know, roll him up for a win. You think of, you know, matches in the past where we saw Scorpio Sky and Chris Jericho, where Scorpio Sky wasn't anywhere close. You know, he was at a much higher level than Allen Angels, and he's not close to where he is now. But, you know, he was able to roll up Chris Jericho and lead to a title match down the road. So by doing things like that, it gives you, you know, a sense that anything could happen. You know, Allen Angels, of course, is not, you know, at that stage yet, but it does give him a nice spot to get featured, get his name, you know, in front of fans, and also just show, you know, some of the stuff that he can do against, you know, a star on the roster.
All right, very good. Let's go to our next call here. We'll go to Nick in Brattleboro. Nick, thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
Good evening. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good. How about you?
Good. I want to tie a few things together on the show tonight. One is that the way they handled Jon Moxley, you know, making this decision, and I totally support him, and I've lived that with several friends and parent, and, you know, and it's a tough decision, and it's a hard road, so I just wish him the best of luck. But, you know, people have been getting on Tony somewhat, you know, always stockpiling so many people and stuff, But tonight was a perfect example of he lost Moxley and was able to slide Miro right in. And, you know, they can now go in so many different directions because let's say Miro beats Danielson and Paige beats Omega. It sets up, you know, Adam Page's next, you know, big opponent. Whether Miro actually ever gets there or not, we're months away from that. But I just think the roster Tony has assembled lets him, you know, dance side to side. You know, it's move when he has to move. Whereas, could you imagine if, like, suddenly Seth Rollins disappeared and now who's Big E going to fight? You know, I mean, it's just there's he's got all these kind of people just percolating. And to push back on Hinton a little bit, it's like the Bucks and Adam Cole are almost kind of like they're sitting in the bullpen and they're doing enough to stay in front of everybody, but when the Inner Circle is done with the American top team, then you can move them over. Cole can go for the TNT title. The Bucks can fight LAX. I'm going to use that name. You know, Pride and Powerful. I think they're almost kind of like he's got them kind of just sitting there, bubbling and get through some stuff, and then move them in.
Yeah, I don't think the issue is having people in the bullpen. It is with some people. I should say with me, I like having depth in the stockpiling. I have no problem with that if they're impact players, so to speak. The issue is how many discards from WWE, like a Tony Nese and Bobby Fish, are you going to overhype and make too big of a deal out of and seem you're just eager to sign them where it just gets to – it starts displacing other people who haven't been defined down by WWE to a really low level who are now getting TV time and ring time that could be going to someone else. There's even a reference that MJF made to that. Oh, when all these new guys were signed, everyone in the back was all scared, but I wasn't. We weren't because we're pillars. It was, you know, Shooter worked. He worked that into his promo that, yeah, all these new people come in and other people now are a little nervous behind the scenes. So you have that side of things. The other thing is it's not so much that Cole and the Bucks are – or that Cole is adding too much depth, Nick. It's more that are they – is the mix diminishing Cole as a new signing with a lot of potential momentum? And did Danielson, Punk, and Brian all coming in essentially at once – lead to two out of three starting quarterbacks being moved into sort of backup positions as the steam and excitement of their signing starts to dissipate, and now they just become another really good and talented, but yet another just another member of the roster, a deep roster, and that excitement of, oh, my God, they're here now, this is so exciting, sort of dissipates because you brought in three big starters all at once and you only had room for one. So –
no,
I would say that's
valid,
how
valid
I would.
Point.
Yeah. So, Joel, you do want to react to any of that?
Yeah. I mean, like, there's so much going on in the roster, and that's why I wanted to ask the on-site correspondent, you know, do you feel that Omega and Page is the hottest program right now, that's the title program?
Yeah.
Because there is so much that's going on, you know, on this roster. And it's like you think about, you know, Cody and people wanting him to turn heel, and it's like, would now even be a good time for that? And my answer would be really no, because you would want to wait until that's really kind of your top program. Otherwise, it just kind of becomes, you know, another thing that's just, you know, on the roster. And so, you know, that's one of the adverse effects of bringing all these guys in at the same time is that, you know, Bryan Danielson's stock has just soared from here, that people are able to see him in a free environment, you know, be the awesome wrestler that he is. But, you know, I think that Adam Cole is more kind of what Nick says, that he's more kind of waiting in the wings, you know, with the Young Bucks of the association. I think he's gone down a little bit, but I think that, you know, you can heat him up real quick by just inserting him into another, you know, good program. But, you know, you want to have depth on there because, you know, he brings up another point that's like you look at WWE and it's like if they lose somebody big, I mean, that's, you know, almost catastrophic to them because they don't have anyone to pull from. They don't really have, you know, any really ready-made stars from NXT at this point that they could pull up and insert into a really big role. Whereas AEW, I mean, they can very easily, you know, move people up and down the roster that they don't – they have a lot of, you know, undercard guys, but they pretty much just use them for dark and elevation. Blind Dynamite can really be kind of moved to pretty much anywhere on the roster or anywhere on the card.
All right. Nick, back to you.
Yeah, no, I also – you said it at the beginning of the show. I just – what Miro's doing in his – you know, promos is just it's just so good, and he always has a way of bringing Lana in for like a two-liner, you know, and it's just you know, it's just I can imagine he goes home and Lana goes, oh, that was so great, honey. You know, it's just he's like perfect,
and he goes,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, that's so good. I got to keep my wife happy. And the one thing I just...
For you, God.
Yeah, for the I am the Redeemer. I watched Cody's entrance tonight, and I'm just going, is he that blunt? I mean, you said it a couple of weeks ago, you know, it'd be so much better if he just, if he really does want to stay a babyface, you know, just come down to the ring, you know, just run down to the ring, you know, just this entrance of his is just, it's 100% heel. And maybe that's what's in the back of their mind. I mean, it's just that this is what we've been planning all the time, and all you people are talking about it, but we know what we're doing. But I'm just watching it. It was just like, oh, my God, what are you doing?
It feels like, and I've never said this before, but Cody's ring entrance feels like a scene out of Spinal Tap. It's just too much.
I can't believe you pulled a Spinal Tap reference.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean.
He turns it up to 11.
Yes, it feels like it would be in a, you know, mockumentary on pro wrestling with the oblivious EVP who doesn't get that it's just too much. And if he just pulled back and had a regular entrance with regular music and get rid of all the extra pyro from the under the stage, just all of that, and just got back to being a hardworking, my business is done in the ring type guy. I mean, it's every week is WrestleMania for him, you know, and it's just the extra layer on top of extra layer. You know, DDP told me, you know, DDP told me in the Torch Talk that, you know, Eric Bischoff just came up to him one time and said, look at you. Every idea you've ever had is layered on top of you. It's layer upon layer of earrings and this and that and those pants and that jacket and that the medallion and this and that and your hair and your hat. Strip it all away. Strip it all away and just be the common guy, the common baby face. DDP, the man of the people, it'll work. And DDP gives Eric credit for that. And it did. It worked. And I just Cody's entrance is layer upon layer upon layer of, will this work? Will this be cool? Will this look good? And, you know, Brandy or whomever's sitting there going, oh, yes, 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 more, more. And it's like it just needs to be edited down. Okay, point made. Yeah, go ahead, Nick.
Oh, no, I'm going to see your Spinal Tap reference and raise
yes.
you Rocky Horror Picture Show when Frankenfurter comes down the little elevator with his, and you see the high heels, and then you see the stockings, and then you realize it's a guy.
Yep. 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 Good job. Yep.
So, with that, I'm going to leave your audience with a Spinal Tap, Rocky Horror Picture Show vision in their minds, and have a really good night. And to John Moxley and his family, I hold nothing but good wishes in my heart for a it's going to be a long recovery, but it can be done, and I hope he does it.
Yeah, we all do. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it. All right. Let's go next to area code 864, and this is last call, too, if you want to call up, 347-215-8558, and push 1 on your keypad if you want to be on the show. 864, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What did you think about Dynamite? Oh, state your name and where you're calling from first.
Hey, this is James in Clemson.
Hey, James, good to hear from you. Yeah, so what did you think of Dynamite tonight?
I thought it was a good show. I called in to talk about Miro being moved into the John Moxley spot. And
yep.
I just want to say that I think that is a fantastic move. And I didn't even think about it until tonight. But once they announced it, I started thinking about Miro versus Bryan Danielson. And then I started thinking about Miro versus Heyman Page. And I just think those would be fantastic matches. And if it were me, I would go with Miro over Danielson, because the title hunt fits his character as it is, and I just want to commend him for that move. And I think I want to know what you guys would do if it were you in that position. Would you push Miro like I think you should?
Yeah, I mean, I am, like I said, I'm a big fan of Miro. He's one of my favorites to watch right now. I wasn't sure if it was such short notice, and obviously the decision to go with Miro here was by definition short notice. And I'm sure Tony thought of a number of things. My main concern was not rushing something else that if there was a better option. I even talked about possibly them delaying the tournament, you know, but that put some pressure on Moxley. Like, okay, will you be fine by January? Can we, you know, you don't want to put that kind of pressure on anyone, but they obviously had something in mind for Moxley, but they also had something in mind for Cole and Danielson and Punk and Hangman Page and on. Like, you don't want to blow some other storyline that's going well to fill this in. And so obviously they sacrificed something in this Miro storyline and the cadence and pacing and eventual direction they were going. Maybe it'll come out at some point. Maybe Tony will talk about what the idea was that got sidelined or fast-tracked. I like this option a lot. I don't think that nothing jumps out as a better option to me. I mean, you know, they could have put somebody from earlier rounds back in, I guess. They could have just given Cassidy a bye, but that's not, you know, a great finals. So I just think this was a really good call. I think it worked. Joel, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that this was, you know, like I said before, a natural fit for, you know, the story that they have doing for Miro, and then, you know, how he ties in that God either gave him a gift or he is, you know, you know, playing with him. And so, I mean, the way I booked this too, I mean, is I think you could go really either way. I mean, you could have a Danielson versus presumably, you know, Kenny Omega again, or you could do against Hangman Page in his first title defense to kind of do a big, you know, just have a really good match. And you could, you know, probably don't want to wait until Revolution, but make it kind of into a big Dynamite or a big, and I could very well see Miro too. I mean, it's hard that I don't want to see Miro, you know, exactly get to that point going to the championship match and then losing, you know, this quickly. But I also think that he could take that loss, you know, and let's say that he faces Hangman Page. I think that he's able to take that loss, you know, and then go back on a rampage, get mad at God, and, you know, just tear through a bunch of other people back on his way up to the top.
Yeah, if the idea was Miro was going to go heel and or either against Hangman or prior to the Hangman match, if he was going to beat Danielson, maybe go heel against Danielson, that's a great money match. And you could afford to have him lose and move on to something else. I mean, I think Moxley is this sort of Teflon in that way. With Miro, you might have a tougher choice. I mean, you don't want to pull the rug out from under Hangman right away, but you could, because Hangman, and Eric Grove wrote about this in the VIP column that we put up earlier today, a special feature on Hangman Page. He's a different kind of babyface, and there is something about when the chase is over, what happens. And it's great to have a strong opponent like Moxley waiting for you if he goes heel. It's great now having a strong opponent like Miro. You know, Sting, when he first won the WCW title, didn't have that line of good opponents. We were, those of us who were endorsing Sting as champion, were left going, okay, but you need to have some good heel opponents for him, and they just didn't afterwards, and it really hurt him. So, you know, Miro's a good, tough opponent, but it might be a little too much too soon, and I'm a big enough fan of what Miro's doing right now. I'm not sure that I want to see him lose to Paige, and maybe Miro can beat Paige, and then Paige goes into self-doubt again, and they just continue that story. There's risk in doing that, but there's also some reward. If you go, all right, he's a former champion, but he only held the title for X amount of time, and he goes on another journey, as long as it doesn't seem too, you know, it's just not a pity party and people just get sick of it. But instead, it's like it causes him to change his approach again and fight as an underdog once again. You know, that could work too. I mean, I'm high enough on Miro. I'm not ruling out the idea that I don't think he should be champion, you know, by early next year, even if Paige wins, you know, in 10 days.
Yeah, I agree too. With Hangman being a different kind of babyface, I really think Miro is just an all-around different kind of heel. He's really figured out how to play not only the big man, but like just his style of big man. Like, because he's not the Big Show. He's more like just a big guy who can kick some butt, you know.
Yep.
And I'm actually on record of saying that I think Miro is greater than Kenny Omega. I've never really liked Omega that much. So, and I think it's safe to say that we're headed in that direction. And if it were me, I'd just push Miro to the moon and back. But I like Hangman too. So I think there's ways to do it without Barry and Hangman. But that's all I really wanted to say. And other than the fact that I do want to point out with Cody, I think he wants to get that Roman Reigns reaction, like you said, and then he wants to do the right thing that Roman never did, and that John Cena never did, you know, turn heel at the right moment when things are the hottest, you know. So that's just my opinion on what's going to happen there. So that's all I had, and I will listen to you elsewhere.
Thanks, James. Appreciate it. Yeah, two things I want to throw to you on, Joel. Tough call, a tough choice. You get to keep Miro or Kenny Omega for the next 3 years. Who do you take and who do you cut?
Wow. Yeah. I did, you know, if you were to ask this question just a couple months ago or maybe a year ago, I think that you'd say, like, Kenny Omega, for sure. But I just think that there's so much more to Miro. And I'm not saying that, you know, that we've seen everything with Kenny Omega. I still think that there's a ton of value with him. He's a fantastic wrestler. But as we've seen, that he's just not he's not the same guy in New Japan. And that's what people want to see. And I think that Miro just has so much to offer in a role that we just don't see a whole lot of, you know, in North American wrestling, as like the big, like, thick wrestler who's like really good too. He's not just a klutz, you know, who's just this big muscle up guy who's out there. I just think that Miro, you know, has a ton more to offer that we just haven't even seen yet. So, I mean, it's a tough question, and it's hard to commit either way, but I'll just say this. I look forward more to see the next 3 years of Miro than I would look forward to seeing Kenny Omega.
I think you can pick Miro without having to make it sound like you're dogging on Kenny as washed up and he sucks. It can be more of a compliment for Miro. That said, Kenny is making it a little easier than it should be, or a little harder than it should be, whichever side you're on. A little harder to say yes to Kenny, or a little easier to say, no, I'll take Miro, if you had to make that choice. But Miro is just a more serious person right now, and he wasn't that long ago. There's part of me that's like, there's a big what if with Kenny. I mean, he just turned 38. Miro's 35. You've got more, you know, Kenny's more beat up than Miro, you know, in terms of his time in the ring and the matches he's had. There's a durability issue. There's a, is he still hungry? I think Miro's more hungry than Omega is. I think Omega is
clearly.
Yeah. Omega's like, I'm made. I'm freaking the 6-star best bout machine. I've got my legacy. I've got my Hall of Fame. I'm good. You know, now I'm just going to kind of have fun and be self-indulgent and you know, every once in a while show I still got it. But it's, you know, he's that veteran player on a team that's borderline playoffs in the NBA, and Miro's that guy who's just hungry to prove something and win that first ring. So there's it's I'm with you. I was hard on Miro not that long ago, and he has come around. But the question is, can Kenny come around? You know, is there going to be criticism that gets to Kenny? Or you know, if all of a sudden he moves down the card, does Kenny go, whoa, wait, what? You know, I want to build a legacy here. I just don't sense Kenny cares about his legacy or that he thinks there's anything more to add to a legacy that, in his mind, no one will ever touch, so why should I even act like I need to try? And I think that vibe comes across sometimes. Whatever the psychology of it is, whether – it's just he doesn't have a great sense of how to be a top-level act on American television, and he's underperforming due to bad judgment, or he's just phoning it in because he thinks he's already done it all. Miro, yeah. Boy, that sounds like I'm burying Kenny. And I think Kenny – I think I say all that with a sense of what if he flips a switch and all of a sudden he's like, oh, I'm going to be great Kenny again. Like, I'm feeling healthy, and I've saw what Miro did going from video games to this great character. I want to have a run like that. And if he turned it on and flipped that switch and listened to the right people, it could just be amazing. But I sort of thought, and we got hints that that was going to be what Don Callis was for him. And it wasn't. And now Don's not around as much. And so, yeah, I think a safer bet is to go with Miro, who's hungry and just doing some great work. But it's an interesting topic. I mean, I'm sure people would strongly disagree who are huge Kenny fans. But you know what Kenny did 4 years ago in Japan doesn't make a big difference to the next 500,000 or million people AEW is trying to attract. You know, I mean, those you don't get to coast on something you did 4 years ago. You've got to show people today why they need to tune in every week to see you. And I guess one of my criticisms of this show, the second to last Dynamite before Full Gear, is I just didn't. I don't sense that the world title's being promoted as bigger than other things on the show. It seems sort of intentional. That was the case with the last pay per view too. The world title and Astro Outside Correspondent, you know, at the end did this feel bigger than anything else? And I think you want ultimately your world champion to feel like the biggest deal of everything, and everything else is a notch below it. And I just don't think Kenny is accomplishing that for whatever reason. You can blame booking, his opponents. All these new signings, stealing some of his thunder, whatever excuses / reasons there are, he doesn't seem like the biggest star in the company. He just seems like a big star in an ensemble company. I roll my dice on different champions until somebody stands out. And I think the hype tonight is not serving Kenny well. Like, I just think they need to do more on Dynamite and Rampage with video features to make sure people know our world champion is our biggest star. Kenny is our biggest star. And what's at stake is Hangman Page trying to become the biggest star. But what's at stake if Hangman Page is wrestling to hold a belt, but just be another guy on a show with a lot of parody and a lot of people sharing one spotlight? It takes away from the value of the pay-per-view main event.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more with that, because it's just, you know, Kenny Omega is going to be just such an interesting figure to look back on and look at his career, because he's still having these phenomenal matches, you know, all the time he's having these great matches. But at the same time, he's kind of like one of those guys that we talk about where it's like, you know, they had their career in WWE and then they had their career and then, you know, kind of their after career somewhere else. You know, you talk about like a Booker T, right? He has his career in WWE and that's kind of the after career. That's what's so weird about Kenny Omega, is that right now in AEW, this does feel like kind of the, you know, the after career, that he's kind of done his stuff. He kind of made his fame in New Japan, being on the indie scene, where he was really, I mean, you think of 2018, you know, around All In, when he wrestled in the United States, I mean, it was a big deal. I mean, it was presented as like, oh my gosh, Kenny Omega is going to have a huge match in the United States. Like, you got to see this.
Yep.
And, you know, now he's just, like you said, he's part of this ensemble cast where it just kind of seems like, you know, that they're still kind of floating around, kind of keeping the elite guys, some of the original people, Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, you know, who originally signed with the company, kind of in that title picture. And it really feels like fans want to see, you know, more of the Bryan Danielson, the Miro, you know, some of these other guys, Darby Allin, you know, more towards the top of the card versus these other guys that they really had planned around. You know, where it feels like right now, I mean, that Bryan Danielson and perhaps even Adam Cole and CM Punk are like kind of the, you know, the biggest stars in the company. And, you know, that's kind of at the detriment of the AEW championship, because it just feels like kind of secondary, like almost old news that, you know, we've seen Kenny Omega. He's been around here for a long time. But just imagine if Bryan Danielson was AEW champion and every title match that he had, I mean, would just be, you know, this awesome spectacle because it's all these guys he hasn't wrestled before.
And what you want is how do you take advantage of Punk, Danielson, and Cole in addition to getting the most out of Omega and Cody and Hangman Page and now Miro. And you've still got, you know, MJF out there touting the pillars, you know, the name, you know, the equivalent of the AEW originals, you know, the Rude and Storm and Danielson and Joe and AJ, that group, it's a good place to be in if you're Tony Khan. And I get having Cole lay low and be part of something different until it's time for him to step up and go, I want that world title. I think it's good to have Punk. You know, I think it's deliberate. They put him in a storyline where he seems cooler, colder, not hip cooler. I don't know. Then you want him to be because it's not his time yet. And you don't want to burn him out too quick. So he's coming up with these kind of sidebar, sidetrack storylines until it's time for Cole to go, I am the best, and I want to prove it against you, Hangman Page. And you go with it. He's got to time this stuff all out. And it's sort of, you know, Tony Khan might say it's baked in. You're going to be disappointed that I'm not doing more with these guys because there's only so much I can do. And, you know, in one breath you're telling me do more. And in the next breath you're saying Kenny doesn't stand out enough. And I would counter that if I'm going to make up a strawman argument to then knock down. I would say make sure whoever your champion is feels like the biggest deal no matter what and put more into that, whoever they are and whenever who's ever turned it is right now. And I just don't think that Kenny's doing that. But, I mean, they're all going to have their time. It's going to be a really fun year or two of AEW if you know, almost everybody stays healthy and active. All right, so
go ahead.
Oh, I'm going to say, speaking of Miro, let me read this email from Crispy in Long Island. He says, Wade, Miro's promo tonight was simply perfect yet again. I'm not sure what they were originally building to, but the in-ring payoff tonight that set the table for Full Gear was probably one of the best storyline audibles I've seen, especially on the fly. I wanted to get your thoughts, and everyone go VIP. Thanks, Chris. I'm just, you know, plucking an email out here to show, you know, other people are thinking, we're thinking about Miro, and if they go with Miro, and he wins, if he beats Brian and then he goes on to beat Hangman Page and they tell the storyline of Hangman got to the top but couldn't stay there and there's a whole dramatic storyline there, then Miro should be the centerpiece. He should be the front center guy in the opening theme for the show, and announcers should talk more about him. Other wrestlers should, you know, like when Dusty was Booker and Jim Crockett Promotions, other wrestlers would mention Dusty, you know, often, you know, more talk about the champion, whoever it is. And if it's Miro, go all in. Don't make it seem like you're hedging or it's just he happens to be one of our ensemble of top guys with a belt. Like, make it about him because that makes the stakes feel higher. Okay, go ahead, Joel.
Yeah, no, I'll just go off of what you said, is that that's what they really need to work on, is making that AEW championship feel like it is the top priority. You know, and that's one of the things that really hurts Cody, is because he has said that he's not going to challenge for that championship. And so it's kind of like, you know, what is his mission? Why is he here? Is he just here to entertain us and have matches? Because you have to have a goal. You know, there has to be an ultimate destination that you're working towards. And I just feel that the championship at this point has really has fallen in stature just because of, you know, the way that Kenny Omega has presented himself, the way that he has been presented. You know, I thought that the last championship match that they had on pay-per-view was weaker, you know, having Christian Cage involved with that. You know, and so I just feel that there's some rehab to do with it. And I think that by making Hangman Page the champion, you know, it could be a step in that right direction. You know, it presented on how he, or contingent on how he's presented. But, you know, like you said, if it's Miro then who comes in and beats him, that I want Miro or whomever that is to be treated as the number one star, because that's what they need to get back to. Because right now, it is just the ensemble. It is just, you know, a bunch of stars on the show having really good matches, where I think that when AEW is at its best is when there is a clear goal, and that goal is going for the championship.
Zach in Texas says, I know he said it before, but it bears repeating. The promos in AEW are so superior to WWE, it's not funny. With that out of the way, the rest of this email will be a Paige Van Zandt appreciation piece. If anyone has come out of this Inner Circle American Top Team feud a star, it's her. She's got natural heel mannerisms, and she showed tonight that she's got natural heel mic skills too. She's more natural on the mic than Ronda Rousey ever was. We just need to see what she's got in the ring. AEW can't pass this opportunity up. Put her in there with Layla Hirsch and give them 10 minutes. Let's see. Joe, your thoughts on what Paige has done so far and that she is being noticed at a time when she wasn't intended to be noticed, if that makes sense. She's just jumping off the screen, even though there's a lot of other people on the screen, including, by the way, the most winning heavyweight in UFC history, and Junior Dos Santos, who's headlined major pay-per-views on pay-per-view and national television, and larger-than-life personalities, and yet here she is. She's the one who the buzz is about.
Yeah, it's amazing that they have, JDS and Arlovsky, and they're just kind of, in the background, almost just kind of observing this segment as it's unfolding in front of them. And Paige VanZant, of course we don't know how she's going to be in the ring, or if she's going to wrestle at all, or how that's all going to evolve. But, she has just really found a niche for her, as Todd has laid out before, that, she didn't have a super successful run in the UFC. She's a legit fighter, but she's been trying to find kind of her way. And I think that pro wrestling, really could be something for her. She's shown more of a personality than I think a lot of the AEW women's roster has at this point. And so I'd like to see more of her kind of develop and, kind of be more of a piece there. I'm curious to see, how much they do utilize American Top Team, past this feud, if it's just kind of, this one thing and Dan Lambert's just kind of going to stick around, but we don't really see much of the rest of the crew with them, or if it does become more of a staple. And I think that, in that scenario, you could really have Paige VanZant, be someone who's kind of a regular part of that stable. And also if she does become a regular wrestler, that she could be another, really good addition to the roster.
All right. Let's read another email here. Tad from Columbia. I just screwed that. Well, it's not Ted from Columbia. It is Tad from Columbus. I'm going to start over. Let's go to our next email. Tad from Columbus says, open to start a conversation on MJF and Darby. I really like this segment. I thought MJF's usual good promo was enhanced by some unique camera work, and Darby got a great spot over the rail to end it. This really might be a hell of a feud to follow over the years. I can see these two doing some compelling stuff. Your thoughts? Yeah, I think this deserves a little more attention than we've given it. I really like this MJF promo. By the way, Dan Lambert and MJF have both cut out things they were doing that I wasn't sure that were adding to the promos. Lambert has focused his criticism on the baby faces instead of the company. It's not, oh, this company's full of flippy-flop guys. It's Sammy Guevara, you're short. And, it's like it's personal. It's directed at the baby faces. And I think we reached the point where Dan Lambert has gone from just the spoof on critics of the Young Bucks and AEW in general and things said behind the scenes in WWE or on certain podcasts. And he's now just become a good foe for the Inner Circle. So I like that. And MJF has pulled back the last 2 weeks, I think it is right, on the ultra-personal shock comments. Oh my God, I can't believe he said that. Did they allow him to say that? Was he supposed to say that? I can't believe anyone would say it. He doesn't need that. He's too talented to have to go there. Some people kind of have to do that in order to get over. Tonight's promo was my, enter in evidence. He doesn't need to go there to be excellent, top tier on the mic. And one detail that I really like that MJF is putting into his promos is, I'm not just the insult machine. I'm not just cocky. I am good. In fact, I'm great. In fact, nobody's ever beat me. It's important that he doesn't come across, because he's not Miro size. He doesn't have the world title history in WWE. There's all these big signings. I think it's super high IQ for him to be making sure in his promos he's talking about his credibility in the ring, even when he's running from Darby and taking great bumps from Darby and retreating when after talking big. He's got to show, or he's got to tell people and remind people that he delivers in the ring also, and he can be champion, and he intends to be champion. He's not ceding any ground at all to the new people coming in. And I think, yes, the segment tonight on a specific level is really good. But in general, I think he's hitting the right beats, and it's really smart. And I think he's a really smart heel in this business for the modern era, who's adjusting as he goes and getting better. He also wasn't overmodulating on the mic, even if the crowd heat – maybe it's because the crowd heat wasn't as loud because it's a smaller building. I don't think that's the case. I think he just decided to stop yelling, and I'm also a fan of not yelling, as people who hear me know. I don't think that serves wrestlers well. I've been critical of it when Dolph Ziggler did it and Samoa Joe frothing and yelling. I was just like, I'm not a fan of it. MJF was doing it, and this one didn't have that either, I don't think. So lots of good here. And then the cutaways to Darby and what Darby said, and then charging at MJF. This segment, I mean, deserves absolute a spotlight of some praise.
Yeah, I mean, everything that you said about MJF, and that's one of the things I've really appreciated about Dan Lambert as it's gone on, is it's become less about the fans. I mean, I'm so tired of hearing heels cutting promos on the fans. I'm done with it. But MJF, I mean, just this was all about how he wants to beat Darby Allin because he is just that good. And I mean, there's just nothing better than hearing a type of promo like that, other than just throwing out insults and personal insults, talking about Darby's past. It was more about the match and how he wants to prove that he's good. And it made the outcome of the match really matter, because you really want to see like, man, if MJF wins this, then man, what he's saying is true. And he's going to continue moving up the ladder. But at the same time, you want to see where Darby Allin's going. And so I think that, because he's talked about the pillars and kind of, you know, who's going to be better than who, has added a lot to that match. But also just the way that Darby Allin responded to that. And there's just a great shot when Darby Allin is kind of walking through the crowd before he, you know, attacks MJF over the barricade. And he's just like in his eyes, and he rolls his eyes to the back of his head, but it's like serious. He's living in the moment. You know, it's like when people talk about certain wrestlers, like Terry Funk is like getting into this moment. He is living, breathing this character, not just a guy playing somebody. I mean, that's what you really feel when you see Darby Allin, is that he is just living in that moment. And you feed off of that energy that he has.
Absolutely. Joel, is there anything else you want to bring up from Dynamite tonight that we didn't cover, or any follow-up on anything else?
Let me see. Yeah, I did want to say that Samurai Del Sol, the former Kalisto from WWE, I mean, it's just amazing that, you know, again, we see a guy who gets out from WWE and you forget how freaking talented he is. You know, he was just doing really cool stuff in there with Aerostar as well. And so I really hope the best for him, you know, that he can get away from some of the WWE stink, getting away from the name, getting away from that mask, and just kind of showing off that he's also, you know, another really good lucha guy out there.
Did you watch the FTR promo that came out this week? It was on AW Dark last night, but also on social media, where they – we're sitting on Dax's front porch and set the parameters for tonight's match.
I did not, no.
So I have to go rewatch it, because I thought they ruled out wrestling luchadors. They said no luchadors. So I was confused by that. So maybe somebody can explain. Maybe I missed the point, or did they change their mind? Because they called it the Fresh Meat Open Challenge. And they said, bring us a legend or an up-and-comer, but not gymnastics and cartoons. No luchadors. Wednesday night, you're coming to our territory for our championships. Expect wrestling in a fight. We are the greatest luchadors of all time. I guess my interpretation of that was they were saying it's an open challenge, but no luchadors in masks. And that's exactly what they got, are luchadors in a mask. So I was just seeing if you watched it and got a different impression than I did. I was either confused or I wasn't, and they changed their mind. So I'll try to figure that out and clarify it.
Yeah. No, I haven't seen that. I will definitely check that out. But, you know, it makes me wonder, because I don't know. I think that this was a pretty, you know, last minute one that they announced. I think they just announced this match today. So I don't know if it was a last minute call or what was in the plans for it.
Yep. Sounds good. Well, Joel, tell people how they can follow you on social media, read your work on pwtorch.com. Anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah. So you guys can follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is just my name. It's at Joel Dehnel. That's J-O-E-L-D-E-H-N-E-L. And then you can also read my Hits and Misses columns, which will come out later this week, where I talk about the major segments from AEW Dynamite and just give my honest opinion. You know, did I think that the segment worked or didn't I think it worked? And kind of gives you, you know, where I think that, you know, some of the storylines are going, you know, and some of the things that they could do better, some of the stuff that didn't work. So please check those out later this week at pwtorch.com.
Awesome. Thank you, Joel. Everybody, you can follow me on Twitter at The Wade Keller, and you can follow our brand at PW Torch. That's at The Wade Keller and at PW Torch. And go VIP. You can check out the new series I just started on Monday this week. We'll do this through November and then reassess. It is called Keller's Focus on AEW, a daily podcast focused entirely and exclusively on the latest happenings in AEW. It's been a blast so far, and the feedback on Twitter and via email has been fantastic. And it's a big month with AEW coming into town here to Minneapolis. Jim Ross mentioned the Twin Cities multiple times on the show tonight. Joel, I'm not going to rub it in. You can plug yours if you want, because I know, very unfortunately, you have a work obligation out of town when AEW finally comes to town.
I know.
Yes. But they'll come back if we can just sell a few more tickets. And
that's what I've been hoping for this whole time.
Yeah,
they'll sell out instantly, and they'll go, man, what a great place to come.
Now, I cringe a little when they say, you know, Excalibur goes, and there's still seats available. I'm like, and I know this was not their first choice, and they have a lot of metrics for, you know, where they go and why and when, and I think wasn't it St. Louis they're supposed to do, and then bumped due to some scheduling stuff, so, and St. Louis wasn't available this weekend. So we knew we were their second choice, and therefore we're treating them like our second choice. I don't know. It'll be a nice film. But anyway, my point is, now I lost my point. What was I talking about? My AEW dedicated podcast, Keller's Focus on
yes.
AEW. So with them coming to town, it's thought it'd be a good time to kind of immerse myself and immerse our coverage with a focus on AEW for a full month. So, I mean, the goal is to do almost every day an AEW-based podcast, somewhere in the 8 to 28-minute range. We'll see how it works out, just depending on the news of the day and what there's to talk about. But if you're a big AEW fan and you just want to have that daily dose of focused AEW content, you don't want it mixed in with a bunch of other stuff, this is it. This is time to go VIP. pwtorch.com/govip. That is pwtorch.com/govip. And you can also sign up on Patreon, support us on Patreon, and at the second tier and higher. Those podcasts are also available. You can catch up on the first 3 days and go from there, patreon.com/pwtorchvip. Joel, thank you as always.
Yeah, thank you, Wade. If we don't talk to each other before then, enjoy your first AEW live event.
I will be thinking of you not being there all weekend. Thanks, Joel.
Well, we'll see each other. Are you going to Raw on December 13th, I think?
Yeah, yep, that's the plan, yep.
All right, well, I'll say hello to you then.
Cool. Thanks, Joel. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.